Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all parties are in a listen-only mode. During the question-answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now, I would like to turn the meeting over to Heidi Ribello. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Julie. Good afternoon and welcome. My name is Heidi Ribello with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. This is an FDA teleconference for credentialed media to discuss the Food and Drug Administration Amendments Act of 2007, which was just signed into law today by the President. It is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Andrew Von Eschenbach, Commissioner of Food and Drug, Dr. Randall Lutter, FDA's Deputy Commissioner for Policy, and Dr. Janet Woodcock, FDA's Deputy Commissioner for Science and Medical Programs and Chief Medical Officer. All three officials will make brief remarks about the law. We'll then move into a question and answer segment. I will now turn the call over to Commissioner Von Eschenbach. Thank you.
Thank you, Heidi. Today's a very important day for the Food and Drug Administration. I actually had the privilege a few hours ago to be in the Oval Office to witness the President sign the Food and Drug Administration Amendment Act of 2007. This bill passed with both the bipartisan support of both the Senate and the House, and it really represents an important addition to FDA's authority. As I look back over many, many months, there were many stakeholders, including consumers and representatives from industry and other sectors, that contributed to the issues that are contained or addressed in this bill. And FDA is very grateful to all of them for their input and their help. But I'd especially like to thank the leadership of both parties and all the members of the House and the Senate for their diligent work in having crafted and passed this very significant piece of legislation. I'm particularly thankful to all the colleagues here at FDA who worked so hard over so many months in support of this achievement. And the American people will really benefit from all of these efforts. It's a great importance that this bill was passed this week and signed by the President today because it allows us to have a continuity of very many important programs here at FDA, and it truly eliminates the possibility of a significant, potentially very damaging reduction in our workforce. And for that reason, this is obviously extremely important with regard to its timing. But there are many, many aspects and features of this bill, and I want to touch on just a few key items this afternoon and recognize that over the coming weeks and perhaps few months, we'll look forward to continuing this dialogue with you as we address many of these important and specific provisions. Today, among the many components of this bill of significant importance is the reauthorization of the Prescription Drug User Fee Act, or PDUFA, and the Medical Device User Fee and Modernization Act, or MDUFMA. These programs and their expansion will ensure that our centers have the additional resources that are needed to conduct the very complex and comprehensive reviews of new drugs and devices. In addition, I particularly would like to commend Congress for reauthorizing two other very important acts and parts of this legislation, the Best Pharmaceuticals for Children Act, or BPCA, and the Pediatric Research Equity Act, or PREA. Both of these are designed to encourage more research into development treatments for children, and it's critical to the health of our children that both of these were reauthorized and enable FDA to continue to expand and address this very important element of public health and our mission. There are many other components of the legislation that also will support our ongoing commitment to protect and promote the public health by assuring the safety of drugs and medical devices while at the same time facilitating their approval. And I will look forward to continuing to work with the staff at FDA and our many stakeholders and constituents as we go about the process of implementation of this important legislation, and certainly look forward and thank all of you in the media for your interest, and look forward to continuing our dialogue with you as we go forward. And now I'd like Dr. Randy Lutter and Dr. Janet Woodcock to touch on some of the specific details in the important components of this legislation that I referred to, and then we'll be happy to take your questions and continue the dialogue. Randy?
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to join the Commissioner of FDA and my colleague, Dr. Janet Woodcock, in commenting on this landmark FDA legislation. And I'd like to focus my remarks on two specific parts of this legislation. These two provisions reauthorize user fees until 2012 for the review of new drugs and new medical devices. These user fees account for nearly one quarter of FDA's total budget. These programs are crucial for the agency's ability to efficiently and effectively carry out some of its most essential public health functions. And above all, they ensure that patients will continue to have access to new devices and new drugs that FDA finds are safe and effective. First, with respect to the prescription drug user fee amendments of 2007, the reauthorization provision for user fees for prescription drugs and biologics provides authority for FDA to collect at least $392 million annually from manufacturers. This represents an increase of $87 million over the current baseline and a tripling of funding from user fees for post-marketing safety surveillance. The law also authorizes user fees for the following purposes: to review direct-to-consumer television ads that are voluntarily submitted to the agency for reviewing, to help expand FDA's implementation of guidance for our product reviewers, to develop guidelines for industry on clinical trial design, and to help move the agency and the drug industry toward an all-electronic environment that's appropriate for the 21st century. The second major provision that I'd like to talk about deals with the medical device user fee amendments of 2007. The reauthorization of the medical device user fee program will provide, in addition to funds appropriated by Congress, a total revenue to the agency of $287 million by October of 2012. The main highlights of these amendments include the following. The law enhances and provides sound footing for the device review program while maintaining predictability in fees for the industry. It streamlines the device inspection program by allowing accredited outside firms to conduct routine inspections for good manufacturing practices, and it helps FDA focus its inspection resources on high-risk products and production facilities. Finally, it will enhance the development of in vitro diagnostic devices by, among other measures, enabling FDA to issue new guidances and conduct a pilot program. In the pharmaceutical arena, the FDA Amendments Act reauthorizes two other laws that are also set to expire on October 1st. These are the Best Pharmaceuticals for Children Act and the Pediatric Research Equity Act. My colleague, Dr. Woodcock, would now discuss each of these acts and other significant provisions, including establishment of the Reagan-Udall Foundation.
Thank you, Dr. Lutter. Like my colleagues, I appreciate the provisions of this new law that are going to enable FDA to do a better job in protecting and advancing the public health. However, we are still analyzing the potential impact of a number of aspects of the new law. This is a very large and complicated new law. On the whole, we see this law provides new authorities to aid our mission of promoting and protecting the public health. As Dr. Lutter indicated, the beneficiaries of this law are the patients for whom we'll be able to continue reviewing and approving new drugs and medical devices more efficiently than we could without the user fees. But in addition, I take particular satisfaction in reauthorization of the pediatric provisions of a law, the establishment of a new foundation to help move forward the modernization of product development and regulatory science, and finally, calling for us to set up a new electronic surveillance system for adverse events for medical products. And I'm going to cover each one of these. On pediatrics, there are three parts of the new law that treats FDA's responsibilities for protecting and enhancing the health of children: the Pediatric Research Equity Act, the Pediatric Medical Device Safety and Improvement Act, and the Best Pharmaceuticals for Children Act. In the medical device provisions, they require that certain device applications include a description of pediatric populations, such, you know, the children who might suffer from the particular disease or condition the device is designed to treat or diagnose or cure. So there has to be some consideration and discussion of whether children actually would benefit from this device as well. It also calls for FDA to track and report to Congress on the number and types of devices that are approved specifically for children or for pediatric conditions so we can all get a better handle on this. And also that FDA report to Congress the approval time for getting device products on the market for children and for humanitarian device exemptions. Now, as far as the Pediatric Research Equity Act and the Best Pharmaceuticals for Children Act, this reauthorizes and amends somewhat the provisions that require drug sponsors to conduct pediatric studies. It provides for 6 months exclusivity and under the Best Pharmaceuticals for Children Act as an incentive for studies that are requested by FDA to be done. And now, it also has calls for an internal FDA review committee to consider various findings that have been made under these provisions to hopefully advance the study of child health and the role of medical products. Now, the bill, as I said, also calls upon FDA to set up an electronic surveillance system for using the new e-health records and other electronic health data sources to perform surveillance for adverse events. And the bill foresees that these records are going to grow over time in the coming years, as we all see, and gives us a staged implementation requirement as far as the number of people who would be covered by this system. And that would, of course, enhance its ability to pick up adverse events. And we are very excited about this and are really preparing now to begin implementing this. This is really the future, I think, for medical product surveillance. Now, the bill also establishes a foundation for the FDA, the Reagan-Udall Foundation. This is an independent nonprofit, independent of the federal government. However, it has its mission is to serve the mission of the FDA, and its purpose is to modernize development of products regulated by FDA and to accelerate medical innovation. So they are charged to identify and set priorities for unmet research needs involving FDA-regulated products and forming partnerships with outside scientists. We also are very excited that we will be able to set up education and training programs as part of this foundation and fellowships to bring in scientists and all the new scientific fields into the FDA, as well as train FDA scientists in advanced scientific disciplines as these fields are currently moving so fast. This foundation will also conduct research projects in a collaborative fashion related to these new sciences and FDA-regulated products. And then finally, there's an improved call for an improved clinical trial databases. This is a responsibility that is shared between NIH and FDA. The new law expands the existing government database on clinical trials, and the expansion is foreseen to be in three phases. First of all, medication and devices, which are new, will be required to provide clinical trial registry information. So they have to register their trials. And this new law goes beyond serious and life-threatening illnesses and requires trials that are beyond phase one trials to be registered for drugs and devices. Second, sponsors will be required to post basic trial results on the database for approved drugs and devices. So those results will have to be posted and so that they'll be transparent. And finally, it is contemplated the database requirements could be expanded to include adverse event information and even potentially trials of unapproved products, but is contemplated that NIH and FDA would engage in a public meeting to discuss many of these additional provisions and potentially engage in rulemaking before they'd be implemented. So on the whole, this law opens up a very promising chapter in the history of FDA and of medical product regulation and other health-related products and foods, and we're very positive about it. At this time, I'd like to turn the call back over to Heidi.
Thank you, Dr. Woodcock. So we will now move to the Q&A segment. Just wanted to point out, we know that you have multiple questions. Due to time constraints, we ask that you limit your time to one question, one follow-up. Our responses will be broad in nature since the law is quite complex and we are reviewing the provisions and developing our implementation plan. And we're certainly happy to work with you to address your more detailed questions in the days and weeks to come. With that, Julie, let's take our first question, please.
Thank you. We will now begin the question-answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question. To withdraw your request, press star 2. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question comes from Jill Welsher. Your line is open.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I do have many questions, but we'll try and focus.
I'm sorry. Can you speak up? We can
barely
hear you.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Hello?
Yes?
Yes.
One specific question. The final legislation increased the drug user fees by $225 million over 5 years. Can you explain a little bit how that's going to be incorporated into the original drug user fee agreement and whether those fees will be spread out among the three different categories and how that will be calculated?
Yes, let me see if I can answer that relatively generally. This is Randall Lutter. It will, the total fees are $392 million annually from all manufacturers. The increase is about $87 million per year over the current baseline, and the increases will be from each of the existing fees, which are for applications for products and for facilities, and the amount of the increase in each of those parts is something that we'd have to get back to you on.
I'm sorry. Does the $87 million increase include the extra, say, $25 million added on for the first year? Or is it $87 million plus $25
million? I think we'd have to get back to you on that. I don't know.
Oh.
Next question, please.
Next question comes from Justin Blum. Sir, your line is open.
Thanks for taking my call. Dr. von Eschenbach, I'm wondering what you think about some of the new authorities that FDA has been given, including the ability to add warnings to labels and require post-market studies. Are these powers that you anticipate the FDA will use?
Justin, as we are analyzing this bill, we also are committing to an implementation strategy that will enable us to define mechanisms for implementing this. Clearly, our ability to now have the authorities to address post-market surveillance, to address the kinds of studies that we need to begin to develop when these applications come to us so that we have the opportunity to really gain more information as they're applied in larger, diverse populations is an extremely important part of our ongoing strategy. So the simple answer to your question is yes, these authorities are going to be helpful. And yes, we are going to now work about the process of appropriately implementing them.
Justin, did you have a follow-up?
That does it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
Next question comes from AP Andrew Bridges, your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. It's sort of a follow-up to Justin's question, and that is, it seems that this bill will tip the FDA's attention more to the safety of drugs once they're already approved and on the market. And I was just wondering, how is that going to sit with the FDA? Do you foresee any problems with sort of shifting your focus more to things that are already out the door and on the market?
May I answer that question?
Yeah, go ahead, Jen.
Thank you. I mean, I think we have always interested in the performance of medical products when they get out the door. The pre-market evaluation is simply a proof of concept to see how they'll perform once they're out there. The real purpose of the medical products and of the rules around safety and efficacy are to make sure that these products are benefit to population. So I think we welcome the ability to really engage in how those products perform once they're out on the market. And, for example, this new opportunity for electronic surveillance, which really wasn't available in the past due to technological limitations, you know, is now a way we can maybe really get a handle on which products are really providing major benefits and perhaps discover performance problems more quickly. So we are very enthusiastic about the ability to actually find out in a more detailed way how these products are actually coming out in healthcare.
Yeah, Andrew, this is Andy von Eschenbach again. And I'll look forward to this being one of those areas of the ongoing dialogue. I think what Janet Woodcock and I are saying is that this bill and its provisions are very consistent with what has been our FDA philosophy of being engaged in the total life cycle of these products to ensure their quality at the front end as they come in the pre-application process, and to continue to stay engaged as they are now being utilized in larger populations, and we continue to learn from that experience. And you will be hearing over the ensuing few weeks the many specific things that we are working on that have been intended to enhance our ability to do that.
Andrew, did you have a follow-up question?
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of a dry-as-toast subject, but just from the question of organizations, that, you know, most of your time and energy and most of your employees are dedicated to looking at drugs before they're approved. So, I mean, do you foresee any difficulties in sort of changing, albeit maybe slightly, the course, you're changing course to focus more on things in the post-market arena?
Right. You know, I don't think that's actually the case, that most of our effort is spent on the pre-market. We spend a lot of time, we spend at least 50% of our time on safety throughout the product life cycle. And although we call this, say, an office of new drugs or an office of device evaluation, those people in those offices are looking at the product throughout its life cycle. So I think we're very aware, and I think extremely interested in being able to have these new tools to evaluate the performance after the market. And we think of a continuous life cycle approach where it's very important that you do the pre-market workup correctly, and that you're also able to know whether you've predicted the performance of the product right. Because if you don't have that feedback, then you aren't going to do the pre-market requirements correctly. So it is really one of a piece. It's a continuous process.
Thank you, Dr. Woodcock.
Thank you.
Julie, next question, please.
The next question comes from Kim Dixon from Reuters. Your line is open.
Hi there. On this surveillance system that you talked about, are there new responsibilities, new reporting requirements for drug makers and doctors? Because there's some responsibility now for them to report adverse events, but it's still sort of a piecemeal type system that is acknowledged, doesn't collect everything. So how is this new technology just going to change things?
Would you like me to start?
Yes, go ahead, Jen.
Yes. Right now what we have, the manufacturers, when they discover something, must report. That's mandatory.
Right.
And that we get the vast majority of our reports from the manufacturers.
What changes here is not a new requirement on healthcare professionals, but rather mandate that the FDA work with the healthcare systems and others to get the data that is now available in electronic form and use that, because that data is much more complete. We think that only about 1 in 10 serious adverse events are reported to the FDA now, whereas if we were using a healthcare system that really captured all its patients, we could probably find most of them and also know how many people are actually taking the drug or using the device. So this is actually a totally new approach. We have been piloting this over the last decade or so, one healthcare system at a time, under contracts that we have and other mechanisms. But because the electronic records are growing, I feel now there's an opportunity to do this more broadly.
Kim, do you have a quick follow-up?
Sure. What do you think the most challenging aspects of the law are? What aspects might we see some type of concrete results from most quickly? Or concrete changes?
Yeah, well, let me just say that as we have received the bill, there appears to be at least 200 specific provisions, many of which have timelines that have been identified within the bill itself. And we will be approaching this very systematically and very thoroughly. And there are clearly some things that we believe we will immediately be able to address. For example, the establishment of a foundation, which is something that the bill requires us to do essentially immediately. So I think to answer your question, the complexity and the challenge is in the comprehensiveness of this bill and its many important provisions. And so we're challenged is we will have an implementation strategy that will address that in a comprehensive kind of way and in an orderly kind of way, and that clearly is something that's going to get a lot of our attention immediately.
Thank you. Operator, next question, please.
The next question comes from Matthew Herper from Forbes. Your line is open.
Just a quick question on the on the clinical trial reporting, both in terms of listing trials and of listing results. Is there a timeline for getting those results submitted and up? And do you have any kind of system for making sure they go up, or is it just up to the manufacturers to do it because they're supposed to? Is there some kind of monitoring to see whether they're submitting listings when they're supposed to? Kind of how do you actually implement this? It sounds like a lot more data than is there now.
Yeah, this is Janet Woodcock. It's quite complex. This is actually, NIH is going to be operating the posting and so forth. So we will have to get with NIH and discuss with them, the various implementations. There are different timelines and requirements within here, and they're different for different parts of these provisions. So I don't think it's something I can explain. In fact, I actually couldn't explain it at the moment. But we will perform an analysis, and as Dr. Von Eschenbach said, we'll be getting back to everyone with some clarity on all of this once we've had a chance to go through this extremely carefully with our timelines.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question comes from Anna Matthews from Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Hi. I just wanted to ask, I don't know how much you can say at this point, but in terms of the new authorities or new powers that were given specifically in the drug area, I was wondering if regulatory action is needed to implement those. In other words, if you're going to have to do rulemaking or guidances surrounding them, or if they just sort of kick in right away, and if you do have to do guidances or rulemakings, if you have any sort of rough time frame, either set by the bill or that you'd aim for.
I think Dr. Lutter is going to address that.
We're right now in the middle of reviewing the bill and trying to figure out answers to questions just like that. A complicated question is whether the provisions are self-implementing or whether they need clarification in the form of a reg or a guidance. All of our regulations and guidances would go through the normal procedure of public comments, which we do for guidance as well as regs, but we're going to have to answer the specifics about what would be needed to implement any of those new authorities or related provisions a little bit later on after we've figured out more details about an implementation plan.
Anna, did you have a quick follow-up?
I'm not sure where to go with that.
That's okay.
All right. So
on
the specific question of the new authorities, then you don't know yet whether they'd have to be implemented through rulemakings or other actions, or if they just kick in.
We're in the middle of looking at it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, operator. I think we have time for just one more question, I'm afraid.
Sure. The next question, or the last question, comes from Anna Ebney from Congress Daily. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering, as far as the provision on the REMS, is there something that, have you guys been talking with pharmaceutical companies, helping them to prepare if they think they might have something in, the pipeline kind of that might be coming out when this needs to be implemented? Is there something that they should be doing that you're talking with them about?
Sorry, it's just a little hard to hear you. Do you mind repeating it or rephrasing it a little bit?
Sure, I'm sorry. I was wondering about what you guys might be telling the pharmaceutical companies to prepare for the REMS provision when that is implemented, if they might have a drug that is, coming down the pipeline when that would be started.
Okay, Dr. Leto will address that.
I think that's very closely related to the earlier question by Anna Matthews. It's related to how we would be implementing the new authorities with respect to drug safety broadly, and whether we can do these with regulations or guidance, or whether they're self-implementing. And the answer is we're still looking at that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, thank you very much. This concludes our media availability. If we didn't get to all your questions, we apologize, but I'd be happy to take any follow-up questions. By the way, this is Heidi Ribello. You can call me or email me, Heidi, H-E-I-D-I dot Ribello, R-E, B as in boy, E-L-L-O, at fda.hhs.gov. Thank you very much and have a good afternoon.
Thank you so much for participating in today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time. Thank you.